Correspondents from our partner, the New York Times, have given us a sense of what it's like to be in Tahrir Square in Cairo. Nicholas Kristof, David Kirkpatrick have been instrumental in helping us to understand the experience of what's going on in Egypt. Now we want to explore another dimension of this story, and that is the level of cooperation that the alliance between the U.S. and Egypt, an alliance that's well known, what have the details of that level of cooperation been? And joining us now is James Risen, reporter for our partner, the New York Times, author of State of War, The Secret History of the CIA and the Bush Administration. James, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Now, I'm great. And in thinking about this alliance here, one of the features of the alliance between the U.S. and Egypt has been cooperation in the war on terror, particularly in the way Egypt has assisted the United States in dealing with suspects and detainees in the war on terror. And I'm speaking particularly of the Extraordinary Rendition Program. Describe this U.S.-Egyptian relationship, if you could.
Yeah, it really goes back to the Clinton administration prior to 9/11. During the Clinton years, the rendition program actually began, several years before 9/11, in the wake of kind of the beginnings of Al Qaeda and Islamic terrorism as a concern following the embassy bombings in East Africa. The Clinton administration began to send suspects that they found or that the CIA found in other countries, in places like Bosnia and Africa, to Egypt rather than bring them to the United States. And the Egyptian intelligence service would interrogate them, and they would use what we would call torture. But the CIA had a policy that no CIA officer would be present during the interrogation, and they would only kind of look at the transcript of the questions that had been asked and would never view the actual procedures by which the Egyptians were conducting these interrogations.
James Risen, let's explore the details there. You said torture. Now, in the U.S., we've had a multi-year debate over the issue of waterboarding. When we say torture in Egypt, we're talking about perhaps other things besides, you know, enhanced interrogation, waterboarding. It's much more detailed. What are we talking about here?
Well, you know, it's not completely known what tactics they use in all cases because it's so secret. And I think a lot of the tactics may be similar to what we would call enhanced interrogation. I think most people would call torture. The Egyptians, you know, have a fairly crude approach to this, and I'm not sure what details, what exact programs they use, but it's, fairly crude approach to interrogations. Anyway, what I was going to say is that it began in Clinton, and then it continued under Bush and got far more intensive and far more expansive under Bush after 9/11.
Do we think it's going on now?
Yeah, I think the rendition program has never ended. The CIA closed secret prisons, but they've never stopped working with what they call liaison services in the Middle East to conduct interrogations. And in fact, I believe that their use of foreign surrogate services has increased now that we've closed our own secret prisons. Hmm.
James Risen is a reporter for our partner, the New York Times, and one, it's believed to be, of the main contacts between the CIA on Extraordinary Rendition and the Egyptian intelligence establishment is this new vice president, Omar Suleiman, that President Mubarak has appointed in the midst of this crisis. Is it too cynical, James Risen, to say that the net effect of this kind of cooperation is that Hosni Mubarak ended up doing the CIA's dirty work and that the U.S. may owe him a favor?
Well, I'm sure that's the way he views it. And I think that's, that's to me one of the great questions here is on what grounds are we, not to get too political, but on what grounds are we asking for human rights and civil liberties in Egypt after we've supported their intelligence service for so long or relied on their intelligence service. I think one of the most interesting questions is what happens if the Egyptian government falls and their intelligence files are open to the public, it would kind of be like the opening of the Stasi files in East Germany after the fall of the Berlin Wall, and then you could see exactly what they did on behalf of the CIA.
Do you think there are officials in the U.S. government that in the midst of this crisis fear that and might be inclined to support a stall in this transition to democracy, James Risen?
Well, I think people at the CIA may... I don't know that. I don't know for sure, but I would think that some of them might be a little nervous about having all of the files and all of the all of their activities with the Egyptian service made public. I would think that would not be something they would want.
Well, James Risen, reporter for our partner, The New York Times, author of State of War, The Secret History of the CIA and the Bush Administration, talking about perhaps some of the darker details of the level of cooperation between Egyptian intelligence and U.S. intelligence, cooperation that began with the Extraordinary Rendition Program during the Clinton administration and continued through the Bush administration where it accelerated, and now, according to James Risen, continuing under the Obama administration. James Risen, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
We'll be bringing you voices from Egypt and the Middle East and all morning long. You can also find them at our new podcast, Wave of Change, The Push for Democracy in the Arab World. Subscribe to it at iTunes or thetakeaway.org. And we're always looking for what you have to say about developing events in the Arab world. Here's a comment from Kurt, who posted this at our Facebook page. Kurt says, "What can President Obama do? There isn't much. The pro-Mubarak thugs are throwing petrol bombs, and Mubarak himself isn't saying anything. All Obama can do is demand that Mubarak call on his supporters to cut out the violence, and Mubarak won't do that until the anti-Mubarak supporters start fighting back with violence, which will then justify anything Mubarak wants to do."
Well, as Risen was just saying there, maybe Obama has no credibility on demanding sort of human rights and restraint based on the cooperation and the relationship.
Right, although I don't think that would enter into whether or not he deplored the violence going on in Cairo. Kurt continues, "In the short term, there really isn't anything President Obama or any foreign state can do. Long term, he can urge Congress to crack down on speculation in commodities markets, which is responsible for driving up food prices worldwide. But Egyptians are facing food prices that are something like five times higher than they were just a few years ago. Allowing American commodities traders to play with food prices like this is destabilizing much of the world. The American government can do something about this by stepping up regulations. We have a moral obligation to." That is a fascinating
point. But how do you keep people out of the commodities market?
I don't know. Maybe we should ask Kurt. Did you hear that question, Kurt? Write back to us at Facebook and tell us how we go about doing that. Or you can give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Join the conversation for sure at thetakeaway.org.
I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.